Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, May 5th. Is the new Florida voting law even worse than the one in Georgia, and how far will the GOP drive to make it harder to vote go without being stopped in court? With us first is WNYC legal editor and race and justice editor, Jamie Floyd. Hi, Jamie. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Brian.
What are the most restrictive parts of the Florida law that passed last week, and how do they compare to the new Georgia law, which has gotten so much publicity and blowback?
Right. So first, Brian, I'll say there are hundreds of these voter suppression bills circulating in state houses across America. I count about 250 such bills in 43 states. So I'll do my best to analyze them with some fairness and clarity. Especially, as you say, Florida, Georgia, also top of radar, Texas and Alabama. Mm-hmm. These are the places people are focused on. I'm not an election lawyer. And you know, Brian, part of the reason this is so fraught is that election law is a really highly specific area of constitutional law. It's a subsection. And there are people who spend their entire careers digging into the hundreds of provisions in each one of these laws. So then to answer your question specifically, and doing my best, Florida, they passed in April a sweeping, multifaceted voter restriction bill. It's a Republican-controlled legislature, of course, there in Florida, and it's known as SB 90, Senate Bill 90, and it delivers to Republican Governor Ron DeSantis his promise to severely restrict access to the ballot. And this all came about, of course, after former President Donald Trump lost the election nationwide, but narrowly won in Florida after saying that election security was a major issue in elections. And like laws in other states, you mentioned Georgia, SB 90 adds additional and I would say unnecessary burdens to voting and could potentially disenfranchise thousands of eligible voters in the state, most notably African-American voters, but others as well. Just to mention one provision that lines up with Georgia, Brian, the bill bans the distribution, get this, of food or water to voters waiting in line by anyone other than state poll workers. That's a provision they borrowed directly from the voter suppression bill in Georgia, SB 202. And so the bill is now headed to DeSantis's desk, and he has promised to sign it. Of course, voting rights groups in Florida, activists speaking out strongly against it. We can dig into some of the other provisions that go directly to vote by mail, which is really the main target of this bill.
I think, personally, bringing water to somebody waiting in line to vote is a form of election fraud, but we'll pass over that. One thing that struck me from the reporting about the Florida bill that seemed different and extremely relevant to the events of 2020 than the Georgia bill is restricting voting by mail in particular. Have you been able to take a look at that, how the Florida bill would restrict voting by mail compared to, obviously, the large amount of people that voted by mail in 2020?
Yeah, that's exactly the primary focus of the bill. So it would require voters to request their vote by mail ballots more frequently. It would ban drop boxes. So they would go around the state and remove all of the drop boxes currently in place. It would allow only immediate family members to drop off vote by mail ballots, you know, for people who are unable to do that themselves. And it would remove every Florida voter who has an active request for a vote by mail ballot once it goes into effect, which would be by July 1st. Now, I want to just emphasize again, Brian, that election security was just not an issue last November, even though Donald Trump spread misinformation on that, lies, I would say, about the stolen election. And again, he won in Florida, and officials there are the election officials who actually run the election rather than the people in the state house are emphasizing that their voting systems represented, quote, the gold standard. So this bill is not about the security of one election. It is not about the security of mail-in voting, despite those new provisions that I just read to you in this bill. Mm-hmm. It is really about preserving the GOP party control of the state.
Tell me more about those Florida election officials. It was one thing that was very interesting to me in a New York Times article on this last Friday. A lot of our listeners will remember the Georgia situation with the Secretary of State there, Brad Raffensperger, who's an elected Republican, who certified the legitimacy of the 2020 election results and has been vilified by other members of his party who wanted to politicize them. But he was an elected election official, a Republican, who stood on the integrity of the Georgia count. And it looked to me from a few lines that I read that the same thing is happening in Florida. Is that what you were referring to?
Yes, that is precisely what's happening. A very similar divide on the ground in Florida as we saw in Georgia. Most Republicans support the bill, especially those closest to the state house and the center of power. But local electeds, many of them, the people who actually work the running of the elections, are coming out against the bill. First of all, Brian, it's going to cost taxpayers of Florida somewhere between $12 and $16 million to implement this bill. But beyond that, here's one very high-profile example. Mike Bennett, the Pasco County GOP supervisor of elections, has come out against it. Brian Corley issued a statement as well, another supervisor of elections in another county. I've spent a lot of time in Florida, by the way, Brian. I was there for the entire Tallahassee recount. I know every county across the state. He issued a written statement, which pretty much sums it up. This is Brian Corley. This sums up the way local officials feel about the bill. Quote, "I am literally befuddled as to why we would tweak a system that performed exceedingly well," he writes. "The current vote-by-mail statutes, policies, and procedures, as well as the established security procedures with regards to vote-by-mail and drop boxes, worked extremely well in Pasco County and, to my knowledge, all of Florida." And then he goes on to talk about the new bill. "The provision that voids all vote-by-mail requests will not only impact millions of Florida voters, but will cause an unfunded mandate of millions of dollars to the taxpayers of our great state." So I could go on, Brian, to read similar quotes from other elected officials across the state. But then Bennett did say about this when asked by a reporter about the removal of drop boxes. So they have to go around the state to rip out the drop boxes as mandated by the bill. He says, quote, quote, "What the hell are you thinking?" So the bottom line, Brian, is that Florida is now being looked at as a national model for how an election ran so well. So security, efficiency, why mess with all of that to implement a bill? You know, if it's not broke, then why fix it? And there are some good answers to that question.
Well, does it look like these provisions would have disparate impact by race, or that appears to be the intent?
The answer to that is yes. I mean, yes, this is about race. I mean, it's clearly a grab about race and you know, some other people who have traditionally been disenfranchised in the state of Florida and elsewhere. But, you know, traditionally, our community, my community, Brian, the African-American community, has expressed its power in two important ways, through protest and through voting. And I think it's fair to say that what we're seeing from Florida lawmakers is a power grab to minimize black voices because they fear the emergent black power in the state and view it as a threat. And so this vote, I would say, Brian, and you know, I've really tried to view it objectively, but I don't see it as anything other than a vote by the state legislature to usher in a new era of Jim Crow in Florida. And as much as they publicly insist that there's no racial motivation behind the bill, it can't be seen as anything else. There's no rational, factual basis for it, especially when you see Republican elected officials, many of them, most of them white, coming out against it. And there's no doubt that it will directly impact black voters who overwhelmingly vote Democratic.
Jamie, if it can be shown that these laws are targeted at African Americans, is there enough left of the Civil Rights Act that they can be overturned in court as violating federal law?
So you and I, Brian, we always like to talk about the Supreme Court, don't we? And I know that's where you're going. I think we would rely here, Brian, on the Voting Rights Act rather than the Civil Rights Act. And then the real question is whether the Supreme Court has so dismantled the Voting Rights Act to render it ineffective for purposes of challenging any pernicious or unconstitutional voting laws. And I just mentioned there are hundreds of them now circulating in state houses. So there will certainly be challenges. And as you and I discussed, Brian, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was challenged in the famous Shelby case, Shelby versus Eric Holder, Shelby County, challenging the Voting Rights Act, which was originally enacted as a response to the long history of voting discrimination. And the part of the act most relevant here to your question, Section 5, Subsection 4B, prohibits certain parts of our country, districts, from enacting changes to their election laws and procedures without gaining official authorization, meaning they had to show whether the change was, quote, neither has the purpose or will have the effect of negatively impacting an individual's right to vote based on race or minority status. So that's exactly what we're talking about here, right? But then the Supreme Court said, Brian, in Shelby, that these pre-clearance requirements were unconstitutional. And they strongly suggested that Congress go back and look at the law and revisit that part of the law, which Congress is now doing. But Brian, even though Shelby was a devastating decision in many ways for voting rights advocates, the court did not entirely invalidate the Voting Rights Act. It still outlaws discriminatory voting practices adopted in many southern states after the Civil War, and it still can be relied upon to challenge unconstitutionally burdensome laws. And so if these laws are unconstitutionally burdensome, that is, targeting voters based on race or any unconstitutional status, then the Voting Rights Act is there for us to use it as intended. So, you know, I guess it's a wait and see situation, Brian. It's going to be a long, hard path, but it's rooted in our very challenging and ugly history of race and racism in this country.
Andrew in Clearwater, Florida. You're on WNYC. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for calling in.
How's it going, Brian? Long-time listener. Called you once before, way back when the high school shooting occurred down here, working in the education system. Moved down here about a decade ago to take care of Mom, who's 99. And she can only vote by mail because, realistically, it's not practical to get her to the polls anymore. I voted by mail. We've never had a single problem with any of the voting down here. I worked elections for several cycles down here as well. The system is flawless. I was actually running the polling machines. And to me, as somebody that's been on both sides of this equation, this is nothing but an attempt to suppress the vote.
Would it be fair to say that your mother, at her age, would still be allowed to vote by mail? You, if you're healthy, would not? Unless you had some other excuse,
I'm not sure how the system is going to evolve. Because frankly, I think there's way too many voters in the state for that to not be challenged. I'm pushing 60 myself, and work for the school systems, and do not get a day off in order to vote. Voting is not a holiday down here for educators.
Gotcha, Andrew. I'm going to move. Got it. So you're going to figure that out for yourself. Jamie, by the way, did they just remove Election Day as a holiday in the New York City public schools?
That's a question for Jessica Gould, our education reporter.
Yes.
I have to say about Election Day as a holiday, I've often thought, Brian, I would run for office on one issue and one issue alone. I believe that Election Day should be a holiday for everyone, not just educators, not just students, but certainly them.
Yes.
And their families and you and I, Brian, and, you know, all of us should be encouraged through a federal holiday and, you know, encourage the states to do the same. Everyone should have the day off work in a celebratory, joyful way as we celebrate, say, July 4th.
Yes.
I mean, I just don't understand why. I know that's not what we're here to talk about, but when I heard Andrew mention that, it's the one issue I want to campaign
yes.
on. But sadly, and I don't know the answer to that question.
We'll
get it from Jessica.
Yeah. And I was actually playing the old lawyer's game of never ask a question that you don't already know the answer to. So the answer
My
is yes.
Guess is,
yes.
Yeah.
They just it will be a remote learning day now.
Yeah. My question is whether it was removed because of all the changes related to COVID to the calendar and whether it will come back in the future at some point when we get back onto a more regular schedule. There have been so many changes and losses for students, teachers, families
yeah.
related to COVID, and they may have had to adapt.
Yeah,
so,
I think
we'll
they decided that they learned from the success ? Of, you know, remote learning apps that they don't need snow days anymore. Those are going to just go to remote learning days if it's too snowy to go in person. And same with Election Day. And so that's, yes, for another segment.
Well, that's another segment for another day. I certainly have thoughts.
WNYC legal editor and race and justice editor Jamie Floyd, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.